This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It is just gone past 6 in the morning, a very, very wet Tuesday in Kuala Lumpur. With
and lightning, stormy.
Yeah, lightning and thunder flashing by. It's the 27th of April. And I'm Wong Shaning together with Philip C.
Good morning.
Yeah. Well, it's if you're still in bed, lucky you, because it would be a nice time to lie down in this kind of wet, cool weather.
I love wet weather. I love sleeping in wet weather.
Yeah, unfortunately, we are here. But we are here to also gently wake you up for, you know, getting you ready for the workday. But, you know, tomorrow, one more day before a public holiday, isn't it?
By the end of the day, it's 50% done for the week. 50% Shaoning, incredible.
I kind of like these Thursday midweek breaks, you know.
Exactly.
And then we come back in and then it's like, yay, Friday. And then we're at the weekend.
I'm telling you, as we said yesterday, take the Friday off, you get 4-day weekend.
Yeah, it's
true. If it's a Tuesday holiday, take the Monday off, it's a 4-day weekend.
I know.
It's bonus time.
Even though you can't do any traveling, you can't do any interstate traveling, yes, it's still nice to kind of just like plug out and veg out at home.
To be fair, I was very tempted. Okay, I know you're going to kill me. But when I saw the weather, I was like, oh, what a wonderful day to just call Shani and say, I'm not feeling well.
Yeah, you'll be dead. You'll be so dead. After the show, I'll drive to your house and ring the bell. Are you really sick? Do you have a temperature? I've got a thermometer here. All of us have these mobile ones now, are flashing on your forehead.
And like, we have like the mice to judge at the house.
Yeah, like, exactly. No excuses. But what do we have? What's the interesting story today, or interesting stories we have today, Philip?
Google is designing in its apps, Google Travel, basically where you can pick the greenest path and greenest route.
Ah.
For all those tree huggers out there.
I mean, I know you can use your Google Map to get to a destination in the fastest time and they map it out for you. And it's actually very useful when you travel. But I've never heard of this, the greenest path.
Yes, you can actually pick and choose the one with the lowest CO2 emissions.
Oh, so they are really moving with times. And
that's
then you can
right.
make a, I guess, the right decision for you.
And for the planet Earth.
And for planet Earth. In the meantime, I think I've got a little discussion on the Oscars, which happened yesterday morning.
What's that? What's Oscars? Who cares?
I usually care for the very shallow reasons of the beautiful fashion. It's the gowns are absolutely gorgeous.
I did see that the reviews were pretty good on the red carpet.
Mm.
But there is a long conversation or heated debate about whether these award ceremonies are relevant now.
That is true. That is true, especially in this COVID-19 era. But do let us know what you think as usual. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in just a few minutes. But first, here's My Sweet Lord by George Harrison. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was My Sweet Lord by George Harrison. It's 6:07 in the morning, a very wet Tuesday, 27th of April. And because yesterday was the Academy Awards, we are reviewing this rather, as usual, a rather atas article from The Economist, because Philip only reads such articles. And it's entitled, and the winner is ... Who cares?
I think based on the viewership ratings, clearly that's the case, because just 2 hours ago, the Oscars viewing numbers came out and they hit an all-time low with only 9.85 million viewers, 60% lower than last year, and the first time ever under a 10 million viewership. It goes to show that I think the viewership ratings for all these award ceremonies are declining, and it's not the first time. You've actually seen in the Emmys, the Grammys, they've all had record declines this year. So then the real question is, why are we doing award ceremonies? Does it really matter?
Okay, so for you data fans out there that like to know what happened, the Sunday Oscars in the US were a pared down show that was stripped of its usual music, dancing and comedy. And the numbers were actually, like you say, Philip, half of last year's. So last year's 24 million people watched, this year 9.85 million. And to give you some context, the peak was 55.2 million in 1998 when the blockbuster Titanic was the big winner. Remember that?
Yep.
Near Far, that whatever that song, the Celine Dion song. Do you know I've never watched that show?
Oh.
I generally don't watch these shows because I know everybody dies. I mean, you know the outcome of the Titanic. You know the outcome of the Titanic, right? It sinks. So,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
The ending is a confirmed one. So I was like, okay, do I really want to watch this and watch people drown?
It's really well done, well though.
Yeah, I know it is, but I've never watched it. It's one of those Oscar greats. But apparently, whatever said and done, the Oscars this year was a bit different. I think kudos to, you know, them awarding winners to a diverse pool of talent. It was the first woman of color to win a Best Director, acting awards for a black man and an Asian woman. And I think this is 6 years after the hashtag Oscars So White movement was first used. So, you know, kudos to them. They are evolving with times. But does it really matter because nobody's watching it anymore?
Well, firstly, the movies that they are winning are also not the most popular movies, because you made an interesting point just now about the Titanic. Now, if you look at the past 10 winners of Best Movie in the Oscars, Parasite, Green Book, Shape of Water, Moonlight, they were never the top 10 in terms of...
They didn't have the blockbuster or the cinema kind of showings, right, which is critical.
Correct. It's more about the creative... the creative excellence, I think, generated from the report doesn't necessarily translate to popularity in the movie screens. But to be fair, this theme of declining viewers is not a COVID-specific pandemic. The viewership has always been declining for the past decade already.
Okay. I don't know, because to me, they still matter in a sense that maybe I don't want to... Okay, this is the truth. I don't have the patience to sit through this award ceremony, which is at least like 2 hours, sometimes as long as 3 hours. So in the past, I think they've tried to cut down the duration of the show to increase the viewership and make the show as sharp, you know, and kind of short as possible. But I do take the award winners and, you know, look through the list and say, hey, I haven't seen this movie. I haven't seen this movie. I haven't seen that movie. And I want to, because these look interesting. So to me, that's the real takeaway from the Oscars.
You know, you contrast that with book prize winners, right? They don't have a massive glitzy award ceremony. So broadcasting it may not be so necessary, but having the awards, I think, is still very helpful. Now, you think, okay, maybe it's the medium, which is its TV and all that, and people have shifted to digital. And
or watching Netflix.
On Netflix, right? Yeah. But even when you look at the digital part, like YouTube and Google, even the searches have been declining. Because you're right to say that it's a bit of a lengthy ceremony, and maybe
sometimes it feels almost self-indulgent.
It is a bit. And so if you slice and dice it into little clips and segments, maybe you drive some more traffic, but that doesn't seem to translate as well.
Yeah, maybe it's just not popular culture anymore. That's the reality of it, right?
Charlie,
just doesn't attract.
Yeah, I mean, does it create stars like Charli D'Amelio, the TikTok star? Who in the world is she? You both don't know. I just asked a teenager.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. So, I have no idea who you just mentioned.
Yeah. No problem.
Guess what? I didn't even know about
your age, Charlene.
I was introduced to the world of TikTok by my 12-year-old niece, who looked at me just the other day and said, huh? You mean you don't have this on your phone? And then rolled her eyes at me like I was like an alien from another planet.
Xiaoning, you're a media personality. How can you not know TikTok?
I mean, I've heard of it, but she just couldn't believe it that I didn't install it in my phone. Not another app, please.
But interesting, right? These are algorithms that create stars.
Yes.
Even when you look at Netflix, they recommend shows to you. Whereas what we're doing here is the awards is a bunch of these actors who are who have honed their skill and they are voting. It's a very different selection process that's happening now to mass and mass media.
Yeah, but I think each has its part, right?
Yes.
I wouldn't say, you know, it's the end of the awards ceremony. I wouldn't say, you know, that it's come to its death. But I think in terms of its appeal, it is probably shrunk. And maybe not necessarily a bad thing, because it used to be very overindulgent.
True.
But I think it's very good in terms of like rewarding those, especially now, the awards are going to this interesting pool of winners, you know, diverse pool, more women, more minority representation, more winners from not just US Hollywood blockbusters, but even from the world of Korea, you know. So I think great. It opens our eyes a bit. Maybe it's like a little bit like, you know, it's changed in its nature, just like us, what we view, what we watch, and it also has to evolve.
I think you're saying relevant still, but perhaps the medium needs to evolve.
Yeah. As always, let us know what you think. Did you enjoy the Oscars? Did you even watch it? Or are you like me, just looking at the pictures of the wonderful gowns? I'm shallow. Let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Or of course, you can let us know on Twitter. Our handle is at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll have some messages. But in the meantime, keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM. BFM 89.9, and that was Solitude is Bliss by Tame Impala, a rather cool song. I know, a favorite of one of the producers on this show.
It's a great song.
Yeah, yeah, it's a nice
and
way to wake up.
So true. Solitude is bliss.
Oh, okay. Wise words, Philip C. At 6:19 in the morning on a Tuesday, a very wet Tuesday, 27th of April. And we've got this interesting article from Wall Street Journal, not so atas, but still atas, asking you whether would you pick the greenest route? Because they highlighted something I didn't know. And apparently, Google Maps have now added an option to help you find the greenest route to its driving directions.
That's right. It's tweaking its map ads. So now the map will soon suggest a car route with the lowest carbon footprint. For example, as long as that route takes no longer than other options, the current system defaults to the fastest. But the new model will use like road type, incline, traffic congestion to estimate your emissions.
But it's not available everywhere, right?
No,
so apparently,
no.
I think users in city like New York, excuse me, and London, they will also start seeing mass transit and cycling featured more prominently in those directions. So it's not just about the car, but also like if you want to take public transport, a cycle there, which is true because sometimes that is sometimes the greenest way to get somewhere.
You know, I always wanted someone to tell me what my carbon footprint is.
Really? I'm sure there's an app you can calculate this.
Well, but now if it's embedded or it's pervasive within my app, I think it's super helpful. So here in this app, basically they mark it with a green leaf. So when I looked at it, I was like, really, what's the big difference? Because wouldn't the fastest route have the lowest emissions, theoretically?
Maybe the fastest non-driving route is the one with the greenest emission.
Exactly.
The lowest emissions, excuse me.
I totally agree with you. If you're going to show alternative modes of transport, like public transport, walking, cycling versus the car, and say, okay, when you compare all the different modes and this gives you X number of emissions versus that, I think that's powerful.
Yeah.
But just doing the different car routes per se but still making sure it's the fastest, I don't think it has incremental value.
Yeah, maybe then it's also an excuse for you to just feel better about yourself, but you're not really doing enough.
Yeah.
But apparently Google is not the first. Lyft and Uber, now interestingly, they are ride-hailing apps, right? But in some cities, they have also offered mass transit directions, cycling and scooter directions to a destination, as well as the option now then to call a lower emission car.
Yeah, I think this is great. And they followed this process called nudge theory. Have you heard of that before?
Slow. Just gently in a way, right?
Yeah,
is that what you mean?
It's behavioral science to kind of mimic and drive your behavior. For example, if you've been to a men's urinal, and I hope you haven't, Xiaoning, you will see the bull in the urinal.
I was momentarily blanked. I was like, why would I be in one? But never mind.
Yeah.
No,
but
I actually had a moment to think about it, whether I have. But yes, continue your
but
story.
But you've seen, okay, if you have seen pictures of the bull in the urinal, where you're meant to aim at the bull,
okay,
so that you're meant to aim properly and not spill everywhere in the urinal.
I did not know this. A fun fact I found out on the morning run.
And that's nudge theory.
Okay.
Essentially to create all these little triggers to incite you and have the right behaviors. And nudge theory is so powerful, you can even use it to how to drive COVID vaccinations.
Okay. I mean, it's not like a parent, right, encouraging a child to do all the right things. Oh, that's good. Yeah, you got to keep it up. Same thing, isn't it? But I think it's increasingly so because what's important about this is that Google Maps is very mainstream.
Yes.
Okay. It's used by a lot of people. So as this becomes common around the cities and implemented hopefully one day even in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, then maybe we as drivers will then make a conscious decision. There are alternatives here presented to me. Should I not consider the alternatives? Because sometimes we just take the easiest route. We don't think about it. We get lazy. And we are just like, just get in the car lab because there's no other way. But when you look at this app and it tells you something and you're like, yeah, maybe I should take the train. It doesn't take much more time.
Yep. I think the objective is two things. One is either you're encouraging mode shift, you're shifting to a more greener mode, or you're going to look at your vehicle and say, look, maybe I need a different vehicle that has less emissions. So these are subtle ways of saying, okay, if you're going to drive this 1960s clunker, it's going to generate this amount of emissions, maybe I need to move to an EV vehicle.
Do you think then, let's say city planners, or even people in charge of infrastructure, right, in governments, will then look at this and say, does this help in their planning going forward?
I think Google Maps should be so integrated in your urban planning to just to understand where traffic flows are and where the congestions, where the bottlenecks, because a lot of the emissions, which is wasted, is through congestion.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right to say that city planners really need to understand this better, because if you plan it well, you can actually potentially reduce emissions substantially.
Yeah, and I wonder with, especially in Malaysia, where we are so dependent on our cars, and we are a nation that just loves to build roads, okay? Mm. Just look at our every budget that comes out. There will always be some allocation for some highway, especially intercity highways, because the argument is that it reduces congestions within the city. But maybe with such an app, and if the app is very focused in terms of, you know, your carbon footprint and providing these mass transit alternatives, then maybe the government or the city planners have less sort of an excuse to say, okay, the highway is the solution for you. Because people can see what the solutions are and they are available. It's just whether governments want to act or not.
Yes, as long as the governments are clear what the motivation is. If the motivation is to reduce CO2 emissions, then you wouldn't be designing a coal tarred road.
Yeah,
right.
And you would think about last mile connectivity, which is always our pain point in Malaysia. I think if that can be resolved, then perhaps we might have a greener planet or greener KL, for example. But as always, let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin, and to take us there is Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Fell in Love with a Boy by Joss Stone. It is 6:40 in the morning, Tuesday, the 27th of April. And, you know, we've had some very interesting conversations so far. We've had a little discussion on whether award ceremonies are still relevant. Mm. And if you had the option, would you pick the greenest route to get to a destination? And we've had some social media come in with regards to the Oscars. I think somehow people still gravitate to this topic because it's like once a year, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Pearly's memes tweeted in saying that, nope, not since it went woke. No more merits, just identity politics.
Wow. That means Pearly's memes, you've been watching it, but you didn't watch it last year, I guess, when it went Oscar so white.
Well, yes, that's true. Now, Dr. C.K. Chong, I think, you know, highlighting a point that many people feel. So he says the award is merely a recognition and youngsters got more important things to do right now. And this is the point where I think it resonates. Besides that, everybody is down now due to the pandemic. So maybe they're not really in the mood.
Oh, I think Dr. Chong, you're languishing.
Yeah, it's a sense of languishing that's
going
on.
Sounds like you're languishing.
The other thing that my producer highlighted is that it's the pandemic, right? So the number of releases that have come out last year was much, much, much less than in previous years. And also just the publicity on it. They were much smaller movies. They weren't like the big, big movies. So maybe that kind of contributed to people like, oh, not so interesting, right? The nominees. So,
yeah.
Or they didn't watch the nominees. So they don't have any like buy-in. You know, sometimes when you've got your favorite movie, you watch the Oscars because you want to know that your favorite movie has won.
I do recall, because the winner of this year's movie is Nomadland.
Mm.
And last year was Parasite. And Parasite is like a Korean-based movie. And that got a lot of buzz, actually.
Yeah, a lot of people watched it.
To the awards. But Nomadland, actually, not much. Even though it was pretty landmark, you had Chloe Zhang, who won Best Director.
First Asian woman.
First Asian woman ever to do so. But it just didn't get as much talk versus Parasite.
Also, it's just the news flow. And, you know, the news flow is all about COVID-19 and it's all about vaccines, which is exactly the next topic we're going to be discussing, because the White House has announced that the U.S., you know, will share up to 60 million doses of its AstraZeneca vaccine with other countries as they become available. Now, this is an AP story, so the doses will be able to be exported in the coming months after a federal safety review. And the USS has been under mounting pressure to share its vaccine supply.
Currently last month already, he already pledged to President Biden 4 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine to Mexico and Canada. So the US has a stockpile of the vaccine, even though the FDA has not yet approved it. The AstraZeneca vaccine is quite a useful vaccine because it can be operated at, I think, normal temperatures, unlike the Pfizer, although it's still a two shot. So it is a suitable vaccine for developing economies. Now, 60 million not a very big number, but at least it's a start. And the question is how it's going to be distributed, which countries will get it within the US will be a question about vaccine diplomacy, in my view.
I think this is going to be the new thing that countries will use to wield power and influence in the coming months, right?
Absolutely. It's the reverse happening in India now. You know, about a month ago, we were talking about India using vaccines for vaccine diplomacy.
Yeah, they sent a whole shipment to Bhutan, which allowed the country to be vaccinated in a short period of time.
Exactly. And now it's totally reversed because the cases there have been mounting so much
that
they are restricting production. And now people are donating vaccines into India.
Yeah, and also removing whatever export bans in terms of the raw materials needed to produce the vaccines. Mm. Now, in the meantime, the European Union also confirmed that it's actually taking legal action against AstraZeneca over shortfalls of its deliveries of this coronavirus vaccine. So the EU and the pharmaceutical giant have been, you know, I think at war several times this year already, as AstraZeneca said it could not deliver as many vaccines as the bloc was counting on. This has delayed the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccination program across the 27 EU nations.
Well, the drug maker said in a statement that it is on track to deliver almost 50 million doses to European countries by the end of April. Now, the issue here is whether there is a merit for these legal actions over the delivery, because if you look at the orders, when the orders were made, I think the UK and US were way ahead of the game in making the orders, and that's why I think the EU really has disproportionately got much less vaccines than it wanted to get for AstraZeneca.
Yeah, and I think the AstraZeneca CEO, you know, told EU lawmakers in February that the low production at EU plants was the reason for this delay. Now, I think also EU officials also said that vaccinated Americans, this is a bit of good news, should be able to visit Europe by summer. So, you know, as easing of existing travel restrictions become a reality.
Yeah.
So the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen told the New York Times that the Union's 27 members would accept unconditionally all those who are vaccinated, with provided that the vaccines are approved by the European Medicines Agency.
You know, this actually brought me closer to home, which I think we'll probably be able to travel to Europe earlier than to Asia. For us in Malaysia as well, it's likely that Europe would open their borders faster than actually in Asia. I perhaps think so.
You think so? I think it's also, well, maybe because Europe is like, for a lot of places within Europe, they are very, very actually dependent on tourism. You know, like Italy, for example, Greece, Spain. I think they need to open up their borders. And there's a lot of inter-European travel, especially during the summer months. Mm. So maybe they're more open to it. I mean, even Thailand desperately wants tourists, but recently they've had to go into even more severe lockdowns because of the rising cases. But let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, the newspapers, but keep it here after these messages. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Hold On Tight by Electric Light Orchestra. It's 6:50 in the morning, a very wet Tuesday, 27th of April. And of course, at this hour, we're looking at all the headlines around the world. And I've got in front of me the New Straits Times. And of course, it's a lot about COVID-19 and schools. Mm. And we will be covering the very important topic about schools later on at 7:15 with Henry Tan, who is the head of the School Teachers Union. But I have some other news. Page 4, the Straits Times says, no entry for travellers from India. I think because they're just huge number of cases there, plus question marks over the strains, the COVID-19 strains. But Malaysians as well as spouses and kids can return, but must undergo quarantine. So they are suspending flights to and from India, denying entry to any traveller departing from any city in India, including passengers in transit to a third destination. However, like I say, some exemptions will be given to Malaysians.
I think a follow-up story to that is if you look at the Malaysian Reserve, the US and UK are rushing supplies to virus-stricken India. So they are rushing ventilators and vaccine materials to India as the country battles a catastrophic record-breaking coronavirus wave that's overwhelming hospitals and even setting crematoriums working at full capacity.
Yeah, it's quite... You know, the world is, I almost believe, like divided into two halves, you know. One half is where the vaccination program, rollout program, has been very successful. So you have the likes of Israel, UK, US, very, you know, pushed ahead with the numbers, gotten the number of vaccinations that they wanted. Even Australia and China, even though their vaccination programs aren't as widespread, what I do see is pictures of people going around without masks, like life almost returning to normal, right?
Yes.
Then the other hand, you have half the world where COVID-19 cases are increasing. So you've got the likes of Brazil, you've got the likes of India, and even on some, to some extent, us in Malaysia, in Thailand, we seem to be moving into a third wave, fourth wave, whatever wave you want to, you know, want to call it. And it does impact our view of the world. And it kind of a little bit of a way down, like, you know, you question why aren't we progressing?
I just want to build on that. And I actually feel it's not two worlds, but multiple worlds now. So because when Malaysia went into a lockdown, we are feeling the reverse of what it was maybe 6-8 months ago in the US, where we had a lot more freedoms.
Yes.
But the US was in a surge and in a big crisis as well in the UK. But now it's the reverse here. So I feel like we're becoming more insular.
Okay.
We're thinking about our lives, our country, our society a bit more inward as opposed to how it's interconnected globally already.
Yeah, but I think the point is really we need to, you know, wrap up the vaccination program. Yeah. And I think the minister is trying his best, Kari Jamaluddin, to also overcome issues like vaccine registration.
Correct.
Because phase two has started and the rollout perhaps could be faster in terms of people were more willing to sign up for it.
That's right.
So that's part of the process. Now, related to this vaccination program is page 2 of the Star, and it's Tunku Zafro, our finance minister, saying that the move was necessary to use the Kwan to fund the vaccination program. So the Kwan Fund is our national trust fund, and what he said is it was necessary. This 5 billion drawdown from this 16 billion fund was required for a few reasons, one of which is, I think, he, you know, our statutory debt to GDP level is hovering around 58% versus the limit of 60%, and there is pressure that our fiscal deficit does not increase. And there will be plans by the government to actually replenish the fund as soon as possible, because it is a fund used, I mean, the fund is funded by our natural reserves of oil and gas.
I think two key facts here. One is, as we heard yesterday, the government had successfully issued its world first sovereign US sustainability sukuk. That was about $1.4 billion, equivalent to about 6 billion ringgit. Now, that doesn't even cover as part of your debt ceiling, right?
Yeah, so, because it's a US dollar denominated debt.
That's right, which goes to show the government is trying all sorts of measures to try and show up its finances to do that. The second thing is that they did attribute that because of 1MDB, that's why they had to do that. Now, if you look at it relatively, the 1MDB debt exposure is relatively small compared to the total debt exposure we have, 33 billion versus the 1.26 billion trillion debt we have. So it really makes me worried that actually...
How much headroom do we have?
Because it's quite tight if you're attributing it to 1MDB.
I think the point also is that, okay, the reality is that the money needs to be spent. We do need to roll out the vaccination program as aggressively as possible. And it will cost money. I mean, when you think about it, for example, the vaccines cost money, the transportation costs money, the vials cost money, to hire people to do the vaccinations all cost money. But what we want is transparency in terms of how the money is spent. And I think once that is, you know, clearly shown, I think there's less of an issue. And then later on, maybe as soon as possible, the finance ministry can also lay out how they plan to replenish the fund and in what timeline, what kind of target, how they plan to do so. Then there's, you know, maybe then people are like, okay, that's less of an issue. But that's all from the local papers this morning. Coming up next is a 7 a.m. news bulletin followed by more news and, of course, analysis. We'll be looking at where global markets are heading with Joe Quinnan, chief market strategist from U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Stay tuned for that. But first, here's Changes by David Bowie. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.